we announced the iPort contest winner.
It's not Kramer versus Kramer, but Apple versus Apple.
And we have a new way to make it easier for you to leave feedback.
This is Podcast 75.
The next generation of radio. It's the MyMac.com podcast. Podcasting from the MyMac.com studios, it's your hosts, Tim Robertson and Chad Perry.
And it's the first nice day that we've had in quite a while here in lovely Battle Creek, Michigan.
Not sunny, but almost 50 degrees. So.
I actually got a lot of yard work done today that I've been meaning to do for quite a while.
Really?
Yeah, it was kind of nice. But the 2.5-year-old who's been cooped up in the house for the last, I don't know how many months. Mm-hmm. I mean, we let her out occasionally. You know, hose her down and, you know.
Put her back to bed, yeah.
That's right. But, she had a blast. And it just felt good to, I would have preferred sun,
right?
But I will live with warmth.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a whole lot going on in my life, huh?
Oh yeah, but still, it's a great day to be out. So
I said it right at the beginning of the show. We have a new way of for people to leave us feedback.
Yeah, we're using Skype for that. You want to give some details on that?
Well, forget about the Skype aspect because they don't care about that. What they care about is, hey, we want to leave feedback, but, man, recording stuff on the computer and sending you an MP3, what a pain in the butt. Mm-hmm. Nobody wants to do that, and I completely understand.
Except for us.
But then it wouldn't be a podcast.
That's right.
So what we've done is we set up a phone number for you to call, and you simply leave a message on the machine. It's as simple as that, and we retrieve it via Skype.
Yep.
You want to give them the phone number?
Yeah, the phone number is 801-938-5559.
So when you call that number, you'll hear either Chad or I say, thanks for calling MyMac.com. Please leave a message. And boom, that's what you do. I don't know how long you can leave a message for. I've seen them go up to 60 seconds. It might go until you get tired of talking. I don't know. So if it cuts you off,
leave another one.
Leave another one. It's just that, I mean, and this is really cool. If you're driving in your car right now, and you're listening to this podcast, you probably have a cell phone with you,
mm-hmm.
right?
Yep.
You can just whip out that cell phone, call 801-938-5559. And I'm going to put that phone number in the podcast MP3 IDE tag. So you'll be able to see it on your iPod if you go to the show notes. You'll see it right there on your iPod. So, you know, just pick up the phone, leave us a message. If you have questions, cool. You know, we're looking to answer questions on the show.
That's
if you
right.
have comments, even if it's negative, oh, you guys suck, you know, stop talking about this, that, and the other. Leave them. That's cool.
We already read them. So.
Yeah, we read them. We might as well hear them. And I'm really looking forward to seeing how well this goes over.
Yeah, me too.
I've got a lot of email from people in the past saying, I like to leave you guys audio feedback. It's just not the easiest thing to do to record it on my computer and send it off. In fact, you know, David Cohen had done that in the past, and we liked him so much that he does an occasional podcast for us. So this could be your ticket to stardom. We've actually got one already because, as you know, we had the contest for the iPort FS2, and we'll get into the contest winner and call the winner here in a little bit, and we'll get into more of that.
Yep.
But as part of the contest, I was putting in the reply to people, hey, you can contact us now, and I put the 801 number in there. And then I got an email from our buddy Mike at thoughtout.biz. Mm-hmm. We had him on the show. Boy, when was that? That was back in show 48 in October 2005.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that's been, what, 6 months ago?
Yeah.
Half a year.
Practically.
Yep. And I got an email from him today saying that he's got his own podcast up and running finally. And I was one of the people that was saying, dude, you know, record your own podcast. That's pretty cool.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, if you want, send us feedback on this 800 or on this 801 number, and we'll play it on the show. So let's listen to that feedback real quick.
Hey, Tim. Hey, Chad. This is Mike from Thought Out. I wanted to tell everybody about our new show that we have where we talk about our products. We try to educate the consumer and about what they're about to purchase. and we also have a little entertainment in there with some PodSafe music and some interviews. So if you can, stop by thoughtout.biz and check out the show. Thanks.
And thanks a lot, Mike, for leaving the feedback. And yeah, it's free PR for them, but you know what? It's a product that I actually enjoy.
Yep.
The FlexPed is what I've got in my car.
Mm-hmm.
I actually drilled a little hole in my center console and bolted it on with the little nut that it came with on the thread. And it sits there really good. It's actually, it goes into where the little change holder in front of my shifter is.
Yep.
And then it just comes up and it's even right with the radio and it looks great and it holds it perfect. And it's a product that I really dig. I think it's a great product.
Mm-hmm.
So if you guys are looking to put your iPod into something in your car,
yep,
check out thoughtout.biz, not .com, not .net, .biz, B-I-Z. And I put a link in the show notes to so you guys can go ahead and take a drink. You, every time I go to take a drink, you're ready. And I'm like, okay, if I take a drink and you take a drink, there's silence.
Yep.
I'll put a note in the show notes.
All right. Yeah, thanks again, Mike, for that. And
you know, here's the thing. Do you like French onion dip?
Yeah.
Do you like the wavy potato chips that you buy to dip into the
French
onion dip? Am I the only one who, you know, like when there's only a small amount of dip left and just crumbs from the potato chips, I scoop the dip up with my finger, and then I use that as like a potato chip crumb magnet to get the rest of the chips?
No, I do that.
Do you do that?
My wife hates it. She never likes to see the crumbs because she knows that I'm going to make a mess. But
Do you ever open up a soda and take a drink, and then you forgot that you already had an open soda from like 2 hours earlier that's in the other room, and you completely forgot about it, and then about an hour later, somehow, you pick up the old one to take a drink, and you're like, bah!
No, that's that horrible. Doesn't happen to me. So.
Ugh, I've done that before, too. That's horrible. But yeah, I was doing that with my chips. I was using my finger to get the last bit of dip up, and I was using that finger with a dip on it to dip into...
Mm-hmm.
You know, the potato chip crumbs. Then you eat it off your finger. And I thought I was the only one to do it, but I saw my wife doing that the other day, and I was like, I thought that was my private shame. I'm not the only one. Why share that with the national audience? I don't know. You're not alone, people. I do it, too. I use the French onion dip magnet just like you guys do.
And if you want to come and talk about your dipping skills or your dipping problems, call 801-938-5559 and leave us a voicemail.
let's do some... do you want to do the winner now, or do you want to get into the news first?
Oh, let's do the winner now.
Let's do the winner now. I got to go get my cell phone. It's in my coat over here, so you keep talking, Jack.
All right. And the winner for...
You want to explain how we got the winner? We didn't use the method that we usually
use. We used an ancient, tried and true randomizing method, which basically involves us calling up Tim's wife at home and having her randomly pick one out of the list.
Honey, I need your help. So I call her. Usually I have that little script that Jarek Zelek sent us.
Mm-hmm.
And I just use that to pick the winner, and boom, there it is.
Yep.
I forgot to do that because I'm sitting here and we're going through the notes before we start recording, and Chad goes, so who's our winner? I went, I forgot. So I called my wife, and I said, yeah, open my email program. Okay, in the left hand, do you see the one that says contest? Yes. Okay, go there. What's the subject line? iPort? I said, yes, that's the correct contest. Good. That should be the only one. I just want to make sure she was in the right folder. And I said, just pick one. I don't care which one you pick. She didn't know that she was picking the contest winner.
No.
I just told her, you know, pick one. And she did, and the one she drew was...
Mike Dallos, I believe is his name.
Yeah.
From Wyandotte, Michigan.
The funny thing is, after I got his email, his contest entry, I saw that he was from Michigan. This is our second person in as many contests now, because one of the Microsoft Office 2004 winners was from Kalamazoo, Michigan.
Mm-hmm.
And you remembered her name. That's good. I didn't. I should have, because that's the name of my mother. And I emailed him back. I said, where are you located? Where is this in Michigan? And he explained it to me. It's south of Detroit. And he says if we're ever over there in his email to stop by and he'll buy us a beer or something like that.
Cool.
And I thought, So it's kind of funny that he's the one that won. Completely by random, too. You can check with my wife.
As random as it gets.
That's right. So let's see if we can get him on the telephone. We're going to call his home phone number first, but he also submitted his cell phone number. And let's see if he is going to be there. Let's prank him first. You ask for him.
Hello?
Yes, may I speak to Mike Dallos, please?
Speaking.
Mike, this is Chad Perry from the MyMac.com podcast. I'm
yes,
here with Tim Robertson.
How are you?
Good.
I told Chad to prank you first.
I just don't have the heart.
I was going to say, what kind of car are you driving there, Mike?
Right, you want to know what kind? You're serious.
No. I was just trying to get him to prank you and act like he was an insurance salesman or something.
Oh, no. I'm a former school teacher.
So what kind of...
I work at Wayne State right now.
So. Wayne State University?
Yes, I do. I work with student teachers. I help, I supervise student teachers. We help place them, and I go evaluate them all throughout the Southeast Michigan area, actually. So,
do you listen to your iPod a lot? Do you listen to your iPod a lot?
Yes, almost every night.
Well, cool.
In fact, I was just refreshing my subscription just a little while ago.
Well, that's cool because at the moment, as soon as I get home and send it out, they're going to ship you out the iPort FS2 because you are the contest winner.
Nope. Oh, you're pranking me.
No.
Oh, my goodness. That's great.
Well, congratulations.
Great.
You know, it's funny because obviously we had communicated a little bit via email after you sent your contest entry in.
Yes.
And I had forgotten to choose a winner with that little script that we have that just goes to that folder and randomly selects one.
Uh-huh.
And when I got over here to the recording studios and Chad said, well, who's the winner? And I went, oh, I don't know.
Uh-oh.
So we had my wife. I called her on the phone and she got on my computer and I just had her to pick one randomly and yours was the one she picked. So
that's wonderful. I am really happy. Since you started the contest, and one of my computers is in my dining room, and it's very close to the stereo system and the TV, and I keep looking over there, how could I hook this up? What could I do to play my iPod, which I love, and I listen to it regularly at a variety of times, and normally I'm listening to your podcast when I'm working out. Or
okay, you already won, you don't have to suck up.
Huh?
I said, you already won. You don't have to suck up.
Well, no, I'm not sure of that. But did you look at the map and find out where Wyandotte's located?
Yes, I did, actually.
Did you?
Yep.
Yeah.
So,
that's great.
Do you have a video iPod?
No, I don't.
You might want to look at one in the future because the iPort actually allows you to hook it right up to your... I don't know if you have video going through your stereo.
I have a DVD recorder right there, too, and a DVD player.
Ah, well, that's interesting.
It's all hooked up to the same system, so.
I wonder if you could play video from the iPod and record it with the DVR.
Mm-hmm.
That might be something to think of.
That's a possibility.
Yeah.
It's a possibility. Right now, the video podcast that I love, I just play on my browser, playing it on the computer. I don't have the video iPod, but I would like to get one. I'm very happy. I've got the 20 gigabyte, is it third generation click wheel?
Yep.
And I'm very happy with that. I'm extremely happy with that. And like I say, I use it regularly. I mean, daily.
Well, this is going to allow you to hook it up to the stereo much more. You know, I like it, and I've got one that we still have to do the review on, but I like it for the fact that it seems really secure in there, and I don't have to have a heart attack any time my young child runs by and I have a wire dangling from the iPod.
Yeah. I've been also looking at and listening to reviews of the new Macintosh. What is it called? The radio thing that they use now.
FM transmitter.
You know what I'm talking about.
Yep.
And I heard a review, I don't know, was your podcast, or maybe it was another podcast, that it sits fairly well in there. And like you say, if a child runs by, you don't have to worry about it falling out, so. But would I have to, I keep mine in an eye skin, okay? And I know there's a flap there, but do you think that it would sit okay and play in there inside the eye skin?
No.
Or would I have to take it out?
You're going to have to take it out.
Okay.
Yep. And that would be my guess. I don't have an eye skin myself.
Well,
but
I do, but we didn't actually try it with my iPod.
I don't think it would fit. I think it would be just a little bit too thick.
Well, I like the eye skin. I like the eye skin because it glows in the dark.
Yeah, that's cool.
That's kind of nice. So.
I've got our sponsor, Small Dog Electronics, had sent me an iPod case for evaluation.
Uh-huh.
Although I kind of feel I don't really know if I want to review it. It's an advertiser. Yeah. I don't know what the you know what I mean.
Yeah,
but
exactly.
I use it all the time.
This is amazing. This is I never in my wildest dreams. I mean, I really enjoyed the communication with you guys, and I was really appreciative that you got back so quickly. You know, with me, you know, when I asked a couple of questions there about upgrading to Tiger.
Okay. Well, that's right. That was you, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was me. That was me. You know, and I still have, you know, one or two other questions about the upgrade. I'm seriously considering it, but you know, when I do upgrade, for example, if you don't mind me asking you a question.
No, go for it.
If when I do upgrade, you know, I'd make a backups all the time, okay? But you mentioned that your AppleWorks program works perfectly on the Tiger.
Yes.
Will the upgrade take away that AppleWorks program?
Mine didn't.
Is it gonna replace it, or?
I've been upgrading my computer since 10.1. That's the last time I did a clean install. So
yeah.
I've literally upgraded it instead of erasing the whole hard drive and starting from scratch.
Yeah.
And I'm at 10.4.5 now, and AppleWorks still works great for me.
Okay, so will it still appear on the dock? Will I have to go into the applications folder,
No.
it into the new dock there, or what?
No, because the dock is part of your, at least the preferences, are part of your user account. When you update the Mac OS, it doesn't update your user account.
Okay.
So your user, your desktop pictures, where the icons are, all that stays the same.
Oh, okay.
Really, you're not going to see a significant difference as far as what's changed. Of course, with Tiger,
yeah.
You'll see a significant improvement in
mm-hmm.
overall
yeah, like
quality.
I have a lot of files under my AppleWorks program. I don't want to lose those.
No, absolutely not.
And I do several presentations each year for Wayne State with the Keynote. I love using the Keynote program. In fact, I'm doing one tomorrow with my student teachers, and I like the Keynote program, so I just, you know, I usually make the Keynote preparation on my laptop. So I was just wondering, if I did not upgrade the laptop to Tiger and kept the desktop at Tiger, could I still then use the Airport Express to open
yes.
up, you know, the Safari on my laptop?
Yes, you could. No problem.
Okay. So I'm sure I'm going to have to upgrade or make some changes on the Airport Express, or is that going to be taken care of seamlessly?
That should be seamless. Shouldn't be
really?
A problem at all.
Oh, great.
Now, Apple's really gone out of their way to make it as seamless as possible, I think.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, you're taking away all my doubts. You're taking away all my fears that I have about, you know, going into Tiger. I mean, I go into the Apple support discussions area all the time, and I see all these horror stories, and you know, I worry about them. So the latest was the update of iTunes. So I just made sure that I ran, you know, disk permissions before, and then downloaded it and ran disk permissions after, and then restarted. Not a problem.
Well, you know, some people do have a problem, and I found that for every 1,000 people who don't have a problem, the one who does will get the most attention online.
Oh, yeah.
That's
yeah.
the one everybody will hear about the horror stories. Oh, this guy had this problem and this problem and this problem. But the problem is we don't know what was on his system before. Had he done a lot of tweaking to it? So all that being said, I would still suggest make sure you do have backups before you update the OS.
I back up the DVD at least once a week.
Yeah. Well, that's actually more than I do, and I should do it more often.
I'm bumping songs, you know, and other recordings, and I'm adding a lot of family photographs to my iPhoto right now. And, you know, I like that program. So I just want to, you know, make sure that the backup is there. So,
what out of all the programs on your Mac, which one do you think you enjoy using the most?
The one that I got probably the most compliments on was the iDVD and iMovie. We had our 40th high school reunion a couple of years ago, and I took my digital camera there, and I was on the committee that was one of the officers when I graduated back in '63, and so I filmed it. I did a nice video thing, and I put it into iDVD. I did all the transitions and put music into it and everything, and it wasn't podcast safe music, by the way. Pod safe music. And then I made 20 or 30 copies for my classmates, and they loved it. And so since that time, you know, our movies on our vacations and trips and that sort of thing, and I'm putting together a lot of photos right now, family photos, to put together, you know, a thing for my family, for the rest of my, you know, our parents have since passed on. So I'm going to do a little show for my brothers and sisters.
Sure.
Together. And I love doing it. I really do.
It's fun, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. It really is. And it's so easy. You know, when my friends come over and take a look at that, they're just amazed. I mean, yeah, it's just a matter of you sitting there dragging all the clips into the pane and, you know, working on the transitions and working on the songs. But it's so easy to crop out, you know, the bad ones. I've had a friend of mine that belongs to a Thunderbird club downriver here, and they had the 50th anniversary of Thunderbird, and they had all kinds of Thunderbirds shown at the Ford Motor Company in Dearborn last summer. Please come out, Mike, and film that. And I did, and put it to music, and wrote something up, and they loved it.
That's cool.
I enjoy doing those things. And, you know, I just do that kind of progress because it's just fun to do.
Oh, absolutely.
Yep.
Yeah. And I'll ask people maybe if you don't mind paying for the DVDs, that's fine with me. But I don't mind doing it because it's, you know, I have the time now, and I just enjoy it.
Cool.
So, and like I said in my email, you know, my earliest Mac moment was actually an Apple II moment. And I wrote that, the first computers came into my school district in 81, 82, and everybody was afraid of them. I knew how to type, and I knew that, I'm sure I can figure out this keyboard. And my dad was a computer systems analyst at Ford's, and let's say, within a matter of days, I was doing crossword puzzles and word searches, you know, for the whole school almost. So, and I enjoy it. I just enjoy it, so. And the Apple for the Educator program makes it a lot easier for me to buy.
Definitely. That's actually a program I wish would get a little bit more recognition, that Apple does so much for educators.
But, you know, it's a very nice, for example, the Tiger update, okay, is $129 normally. I get it for $69. That's a good break.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
That's a nice break, so.
Well, Mike, I hope you enjoy the iPort FS2.
I really will. I appreciate that. That is great news.
And hopefully we'll get you to keep listening to the podcast.
Yep.
And,
I do. I will. I like both of you guys. that you're Michiganders, too.
So. There you go. Well, thanks, Mike.
You learn now where Wyandotte is, and I've always known where Battle Creek is and Kalamazoo. So.
Well, everybody knows Battle Creek because of Kellogg's.
Yeah. Yes, exactly. Yep. I was on a tour there when I was a young boy too, so
I get questions from listeners when they find out that we're in Battle Creek still, and readers of the website itself, and they ask, do they still have the tours at Kellogg's? Because when I was a kid, I went through a tour at Kellogg's and I saw how they make cereal. They don't, but I get that question quite a bit.
Yeah. But they're not making the cereal there anymore, are they?
Oh yeah, sure. They still make it here.
Okay. I thought they had cut back an awful lot.
Well, they have, but they still make Kellogg cereal here, and they still make Post cereal here.
Yep.
Yeah, I know they make Post, too.
Yep.
Yeah, if Post was my favorite was Grape Nuts. No one else liked it in my family, Post Grape Nuts. So. Is Tony the Dagger still standing outside of Gordon's?
Yes, he is.
All right, good for him. And he's, in his hands or something like that.
Well,
so.
A MacBook Pro.
Yeah, there we go. Yeah, I'm looking at that. That looks nice. So. I mean, I love the iBook. I really do. It really is wonderful. I mean, you know, I take it and make the presentations to my student teachers, and they like it too. They say, that's a nice-looking computer. Of course, I say, of course it is.
Well, you know, the last update to the iBook was 9 months ago. And that's still the currently shipping iBook, is the 1.33 gigahertz G4 iBook. I think it's about time for Apple to roll out an Intel-based.
Yeah.
I mean,
but I'm
it's
not gonna
time.
Get the first generation of them.
No, and I don't blame you there. Although,
I'm gonna wait on that.
You know, I've heard a few problems with the MacBook Pro, but for the most part, sounds all pretty positive to me. But thankfully, I don't need a new laptop right now.
Well, yeah. And, you know, I've listened, you know, on your podcast and other ones mentioning that they're. You know, more and more they're making universal binary programs, so, you know, that's available. But they're still, like you say, too, don't buy the first generation.
No.
Wait and see. So,
well, you know,
the
universal binaries are coming along real well, but as long as you've been using the Macs and Apple computers, you probably remember, probably a lot better than a lot of our listeners, and I remember it real well, the transition from 68K Mac to the PowerPC.
Yes, and, exactly. I do, and I even before that. I mean, I with our computer expert at school, I would always consult with her. Okay, you know, should I upgrade? Should I just buy more RAM? And this guy would always ask her. You know, before she said, you might want to think about. And we were talking about in those years about a 5 megabytes, you know, of a hard drive. I said, wow, that's an awful lot, 5 megabytes. You know? Do you remember those days?
Oh, yeah, all too well.
Yes.
I remember buying 2 megabytes of RAM, and it cost me over $400.
Oh, yes. But I did the first, I think the first computer I bought, even with Apple Educator, was like $800, and that was for an Apple II. You know, and that's a lot of money.
Sure.
24, 25 years ago.
Sure, absolutely.
And like I say, I did say, I think in my email, that I was using them at school, and I would just bring it back, you know, back and forth from home. Nobody else wanted to use it. And I said, I'm getting tired of lugging these things. Maybe I should look into buying one myself. And so that's when I started. And I've, you know, progressed from the Apple IIs to the Pluses to the IIes to the Performas and all the way now into the great iMac. That was always a crowd pleasing. People come over and say, look at that purple computer. But the eMac, is an elegant computer. I really enjoy this computer.
Well, out of all those Macs that you have, forget about specs and all that, which one did you like the most?
The Macs?
Yep.
The one I like the most is one I have right now. That's the eMac.
That's the eMac? Is there a particular reason?
The eMac flat screen, and it's a nice-looking computer still. It really is. I would love to get the iMac, the new really graceful iMac computer. Once they went to iMacs from the 2Es and the Performas that were the ugly gray things, into some colors, into some nice white things, into some more smooth lines, then I really started liking them. But I've gotten a lot of use out of this eMac.
Wouldn't you figure that the PC industry as a whole would have figured out a long time ago to make nice-looking boxes? Nobody else other than Apple, really, makes nice-looking boxes.
I go to a lot of schools. All right, I travel to 15 or 20 different school districts in the Downriver area, the south of Detroit. And most of the places that I see are still Apple or Macintoshes, eMacs for the most part. I've seen one or two iMac libraries, but they're for the most part eMacs. And most schools also will have the Windows-based ones too, but for the most part it's eMacs. And they're just great computers.
Well, thanks a lot, Mike. We appreciate your time, and enjoy your prize.
You.
And
I'm sorry I took so much of your time.
Oh no, enjoyed it. It was great. Actually, we didn't have anything planned for this episode, so you helped
us. I'm really enthusiastic Apple user.
Cool.
So, yeah.
Well, you're exactly the type of person we like to have these contests for and see, and someone that's very deserving.
Oh, mm-hmm. Thank you. Thank you so very much. I'm really surprised. I'm sitting at the computer right now, looking at my stereo right now, wondering how we're going to do this. I can't wait. I just can't wait. So, thank you again so much.
Have a good evening, Mike.
Have an evening,
Mike.
Thank
you guys, too. Good talking to you.
All right.
Stay
bye-bye.
In contact, too.
Oh, well. Yep. Oh, yes.
All right.
Bye-bye. Bye-bye. Well, that was fun.
Yeah.
You never know. I mean, you never know who you're going to speak to.
No.
When you give stuff away and you call them like that on the phone.
Well, that's why I'm glad we started adding in that whole calling the contest winners when we can. So.
That's right. Yeah. And that's why they have to provide their phone numbers. I know a lot of people are a little shy about leaving feedback, like when they call our 801-938-5559 number. You know, it's how I threw that in.
Yeah, nice.
I actually looked to see if maybe that spelled something. It didn't. My luck was Tim Socks or something. But, yeah. Call Tim Socks. but, you know, it's making a connection with other people.
Mm-hmm.
That's really why I wanted this 800 or this 801 number, so people can call in and we can kind of get more of a connection. So other Mac users, because you know there's a lot of Mac users out there that are listening to this podcast, and there's no other Mac users around them. They don't have anybody to talk to and to share their experiences and their enthusiasm, mm-hmm. and even their frustrations with.
Yep.
And I found that Mac users never talk about the frustrations of a Mac with PC users. It's like, we're like, well, we don't want to let them know that we have problems occasionally, too. But, you know, that's what's cool about the podcasts, I think. Not just this one, but podcasts in general. Mm-hmm. That it brings you into a community that you have something in common with.
Yep.
And hopefully with the feedback, we can have a little fun with it.
Mm-hmm.
So that was our podcast winner,
Mike Dallows.
And let's talk a little bit about the folks who make the MyMac.com podcast possible. And that's our sponsor, Small Dog Electronics.
Mm-hmm.
And let me jump. And they're still giving away that MacBook Pro.
So you can still register.
Let's jump on their website right now and see something. Let's see what they got. And Oh, geez. What do you want to look at? You want to look at iPods?
Sure.
Let's take a look at the iPods. They have got a lot of them right now. A lot of demo units, a lot of used units, and, of course, brand new ones. You know what gets me is a lot of people, they always want to get the latest and greatest.
Mm-hmm.
But if you're going to buy one for somebody else, or you want a secondary one that you're going to take in the car all the time or whatever.
Yeah, hard work.
A refurbished iPod is going to work great for you. For instance, right now, up at Small Dog Electronics, for either $149 or $159 bucks, you can get an iPod Mini. I think those are going to be more like collector's items eventually.
Yeah.
Because the Nano replaced the Mini.
But all the cool metallic finishes and the cool colors. So
yeah, well, the pink ones. I personally wouldn't want a pink one, but my wife would like a pink one.
Sure.
And but I really do like that metallic gray silverish iPod Mini. I still think that's one of the cooler looking ones. $159 bucks right now. They've got 205 of those available. And actually, it's promo. Let's see what the promo comes with for that amount of money. Oh well, it's. Yeah, well.
Okay, skip if, that.
if by chance, special number two, nope, I guess. No, we got it good. We're good. So go up to Small Dog Electronics. Just follow the links from mymac.com. And, you know, we post every week on the Kibble and Bytes.
Yep.
Hopefully you guys are actually reading those. It's not. We don't post them just because they're a sponsor.
They also have a lot of good tips in them.
A lot of good stuff in there. Mm-hmm. I thoroughly enjoy the Kibble and Bits. So we do appreciate Small Dog Electronics
sponsoring our podcast.
Yeah. So speaking of sponsoring, let's listen to our other one. But first, let's listen to Guy Searle's Dashboard Minute. I kind of sound like a radio guy there, didn't I?
Yeah.
Dashboard Minute.
Here's Guy Searle.
Here's Guy Searle.
Listening to the Dashboard Minute, heard exclusively right here on the MyMac.com podcast.
Please hang up and try again.
Hello to widget watchers everywhere, wherever ye may be. I'm Guy Searle, and this is the Dashboard Minute. This is simply a jam-packed Dashboard Minute, as I have not one, not two, but three widgets to bring to your attention today. What a way to push the envelope. The first widget kind of falls into the I'm saving time by doing this because category. It's a single-purpose widget, and it certainly does what it's advertised to do and does it well. It's called the Locker widget, and it was created by the good folks, whoever they might be, at BlueCouch.com. What does this 52K download of a widget do so quickly and efficiently? Why, it logs you out of your Mac without shutting down all your applications or disconnecting you from your desktop-mounted storage devices. Kind of like you do when you select your screen name on the menu bar and choose the login window menu choice. Go to the dashboard environment, have the Locker widget open, double-click it, and voila! You are immediately logged out. Congratulations, you've now taken at least three steps for what normally takes two in the Finder. Ever get the feeling that more than a few inventions are made because a person said, "How can I take something simple and make it complicated?" Anyway, find the Locker widget at bluecouch.com/locker. Naturally, it can be found at Apple's dashboard download site. Now I'll segue from a widget that locks your Mac to a widget that can help keep you from getting locked out of your house. What in the world could I be talking about? Why, what else but the wedding anniversary widget? This widget tells you both the traditional and modern gifts for wedding anniversaries. Just select the category, tradition or modern, of course, and the number of years of wedded bliss you have inflicted upon yourself, and oh, happy days, there's the appropriate gift. The wedding anniversary widget is from Shadeland Studios. Yes, the very same group of people that made the adult body mass indicator widget, so you know it's a quality widget. Find it at their website at shadelandstudios.com and naturally at the Apple dashboard download site. Last up is a widget that you might, but no promises, find useful. It's the eBay Watcher widget. This widget was created by Hawk Innovations. which for some odd reason sounds like it came straight out of a Marvel comic book, and it's a pay-for-play widget. Only costs $5, and if you're a regular eBay bidder or seller, you might find it useful. It keeps track of at least 3 auctions for you, and you can set it to give you different warnings for different events that occur at certain points during the auction. Someone put a new bid in, set a warning. 5 minutes left in the bidding, set a warning. Feeling stupid because you can't tear yourself away from buying someone else's used crap? Well, there's no warning for that, but there probably should be. I think one of the neatest things about this widget is its unique way of getting you to possibly pay for it. The creator says on his homepage, which is homepage.mac.com/Jordy2/eBay Watcher, that if you don't pay for this and try to use it, it will probably only work about half the time. Now that's innovation, folks. Find this widget at dashboardwidgets.com. If you have a favorite widget I haven't talked about, or have made one you want reviewed, send me email to dbminute@gmail.com. If you want more information on the widgets talked about in this Dashboard Minute, go to the mymac.com site and look for the Dashboard Minute links. That's it for now. Thank you so very much for listening, and I hope you'll join me again next time right here on the Dashboard Minute on the MyMac.com podcast.
If you're a Mac user and you need a hosting service for your website, why would you want to host your site on anything else but a Macintosh? Anotech has been hosting the MyMac.com website for over 7 years, and we wouldn't have it any other way. Are they the cheapest web hosting company in the world? No. Do they offer the largest amount of server space of bandwidth in the world? Of course not. But with Inotech, you don't get pie-in-the-sky false promises, just the best customer service, the most popular hosting service plans, and everything running on the latest Apple Macintosh server gear. Check them out at www.inotech.com/mymac for special pricing. That's www.inotech.com/mymac. Inotech, the trusted web server of mymac.com for over 7 years. That's like 49 dog years.
And thanks, Inotech.com, for sponsoring the podcast.
And thanks, Guy Searle, for another great Dashboard Minute.
And the news segment today is brought to you by PodJungle.com. Check out PodJungle.com for all your iPod and iPod accessory needs.
Cool.
From MacMinute.com, Apple provides volume limit settings for iPod. Apple today announced, today being March 29th, a software update for the iPod Nano and 5th generation iPods, allowing consumers to easily set their personal maximum volume limit.
The software update also gives parents the ability to set a maximum volume limit on their child's iPod and lock it with a combination code. As the leading provider of digital music players, Apple continuously brings iPod customers innovative and easy-to-use solutions, says Greg Joswiak, Apple's Vice President of Worldwide iPod Product Marketing. With the increased attention in this area, we want to offer customers an easy-to-use option to set their own personal volume limit.
I like that. I think that's a really responsible thing to do on Apple's part. I really do.
Now, I think it's nice, but I guess to me, that's what the click wheel's for.
Well, but that being, I think there's two reasons for this. Number one, it's going to ward off future lawsuits.
True.
Number two, if you gave an iPod to your 10-year-old, and I've got 2 11-year-olds, okay? Mm-hmm. If you gave an iPod to your 11, 12-year-old, chances are they're going to rock out as loud as they can for as long as they can.
Right.
And yes, we could say, don't listen to music that loud. It's going to hurt your ears. Dude, think back when you were 14, 15 years old. You didn't think about, this is going to hurt my ears in the long term.
No, as a matter of fact, it was a badge of valor when you came out of a rock concert.
And you couldn't hear. Yeah.
Yeah.
I can't tell you how many Motley Crue concerts that I went to, and I'm completely deaf afterwards, and you and your buddy are sitting in the car going, can you hear? No, this is cool. I mean, I remember coming back from the Monsters of Rock, from the Pontiac Silverdome in Pontiac, Michigan, Detroit, where it was Metallica and, Judas Priest and all these rockers. and there was four of us, and we piled back into my 1970 Delta 88 four-door boat, driving back, and everybody was talking, and I couldn't hear anything,
It
was great.
Yep.
It was fantastic.
See, I remember sitting in the Kellogg Arena, and I remember Jason Newsted. He used to be the bassist for Metallica. He was playing a solo, and he would hit these notes that were so loud, you could literally hear the steel beams reverb that sound. And he's like, all of a sudden, he was just like...
I'm sure that sounded really good. People with their iPod headphones are going, what the hell is that? But, yeah, I mean, it was a badge of honor.
Yeah.
So what do you do as a responsible parent and you give your kid an iPod?
True.
This software, they can limit it to how loud it's going to play.
You can put a governor on it.
Yeah. And it's password protected. Isn't that what it said?
Yes. Combination code.
Yeah.
So, basically a password.
Yeah. That's great. I think that's very intelligent and very thoughtful on Apple's part. I'm sure it had more to do with warding off future lawsuits, but nonetheless, I like it. I think it's a great idea.
Yep. Next article. Apple's chief technology officer, CTO Avadis Avitavanian, will be leaving Apple to pursue other interests, reports the San Francisco Chronicle. Although Apple wouldn't say what Tavanian's plans are, Vice President of Worldwide Corporation Communications Katie Cotton wrote in an email that he plans to take some time off in the interim. He hasn't left yet, though. His last official day is March 31st.
This is someone that Steve Jobs brought with him from Next to Apple, and he was hugely instrumental in helping shape and create macOS 10.
Yeah.
He was one of the prime architects of driving force behind OS 10. So, what's this mean for Apple? I don't think it's going to mean anything negative. I'm sure, in fact, I know there are other people stepping in and that's more than able to get the job done.
Right.
But let's not forget, this is one of the guys, the architects behind macOS 10. This is one of the very most trusted people from everything I've read of Steve Jobs as far as an employee who he knows and he trusts, and this person is going to get the job done. So,
right.
I hope Avi does well in the future, and Apple, I'm sure, will.
Well, I'm sure a guy with his talents will, so.
Yeah. Posted on March 27th, Apple versus Apple in court this Wednesday, which was today. The Beatles, Apple Corp., and Apple Computer are due in court this Wednesday over the use of the Apple name, reports Macworld UK. The case was filed July 4th, 2003, in the UK High Court. Apple is accused of breaching a 1991 agreement over the use of the Apple trademark and the computer company's move into music services, notes the story. After years of legal cut and thrust, the case goes this week to trial this week. Apple Corp. wants Apple Computer to stop using the Apple brand in association with its music products and to pay damages.
Now, I remember hearing about this case when I was working in Indy. I heard about it on NPR. So, yeah, that was back 2004 they were talking about this.
I read some ignorant blog posts over the last couple of days. People saying, oh, yeah, well, what's Apple Corp's doing nowadays anyways? I mean, they don't do anything. They're just a company that owns the rights to the Beatles merchandise. And, you know, they're just trying to make a buck. Well, maybe. But, and this is, how can I explain it? I'll give you an example. Did you know that the term superheroes is trademarked to Marvel and DC Comics jointly?
I didn't know that.
That nobody else can use the term superheroes. They've trademarked it, and they trademarked it back in 1981. Of course, at the time, they were pretty much the only two companies that were using that term. So they trademarked it. So someone had an article and it says something superheroes and Marvel Comics and DC both joint sent a cease and desist. And the reason is if you have a trademark, you have to protect that.
Yep.
So in this case, I completely understand where the Apple Corp's company is coming from. That this is their trademark. They used it long before Apple did. In fact, that's one of the reasons that Steve Jobs liked the Apple name, because he was such an admirer of Beatles music, and he wanted to name his company after the company that produces the Beatles.
Yeah.
Who could have foreseen that 30 years later, Apple's going to be selling a billion songs over this thing called the Internet on portable music devices that they create called the iPod.
Yep.
And You know, I don't know. Funny thing is, if you go to the applecorps.com website, all it shows is a black website with an apple on it, with text that reads, "This is a placeholder page for Apple Corps Limited." Kind of weird.
Yeah.
And this is from Playlist Magazine.
On the opening day of a closely watched court case in London on Wednesday, lawyers for the Beatles record company accused Apple Computer Inc. of improperly using an Apple logo to advertise its iTunes music store. Apple Corps Limited made opening arguments in its request for an injunction that would bar the computer manufacturer from using its logo and Apple with a bite taken out of it to advertise the sale of music through iTunes.
The record company alleges that Apple Computer is violating a 1991 agreement that sets limits on how the companies can use their similar logos. Apple Computer's founder Steve Jobs chose the logo out of admiration for the Beatles when he co-founded the company in 1976. The company has barred in two previous lawsuits over how their logos could be used. Apple Corps' logo is an uneaten green apple.
Apple Corps attorney Jeffrey Voss played an iTunes advertisement for the court featuring exclusive tracks from the band Coldplay. The ad ends with the Apple Computer logo. The advertisement is a flagrant violation of this agreement as it is possible to imagine, Voss said.
So there you go. There's the latest and greatest. We'll find out where it goes from here.
Yeah.
I have no idea. You know, the agreement was, here's an aside.
Mm-hmm.
When Apple first started making the Macintosh computers able to play sound, they legally was in breach of the contract that they had, the agreement they had with Apple Corps back then. And because Apple had said that they wouldn't... Sorry, I'm sure that was pretty loud on the microphone. Mm-hmm. Apple had said that they wouldn't do that. They wouldn't be a music device. And obviously the computer became a music device long before iTunes or the iPod. And so one of the sounds in macOS, I believe it was macOS 7, might have been 6 that it came out, I forget offhand.
Mm-hmm.
The name of the sound was So Sue Me. And then that was a direct reference to Apple Corps.
Wow.
Saying So Sue Me.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, these two companies have been going at it for quite a long time, and it's never good for anybody, but I completely understand where both companies are coming from.
Yeah.
Although, I don't know how anybody would ever confuse those two logos. Number one, if someone showed me the Beatles Apple Corps logo, I would have no idea where that was from.
Maybe I wouldn't either.
Maybe if I listened to music back in the 60s, and I had a lot of Beatles albums, I would obviously recognize it as that. But nobody would confuse the Apple logo, Apple Computer's logo with their logo.
No.
Nobody would confuse iTunes or the iPod as, oh my gosh, the Beatles record company is making the iPod now. Nobody's going to. And heaven forbid someone thought that they were doing that.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that would be great for them, wouldn't it?
Sure would be.
They could only hope that they could associate their name with that.
Of course, so would a lawsuit against one of the most popular online music sellers. So,
let's jump into a little bit of our feedback before we wrap up the show.
Sure. This is from Eric Melkovic, and Eric's written to us before. He says, the new French law regarding the DMS used by Apple and Microsoft might be just the beginning. I wouldn't be surprised if this or a similar lawsuit will be passed by the EU Parliament pretty soon. Apple has been under fire from consumer interest groups and authorities in Europe for quite some time now because of the DRM issue. So it is my belief that France is simply the beginning. Apple might not care too much about the French market, but they will care about the entire EU market. Personally, I would like to have the option to switch to something like a Sony Walkman phone without having to break or circumvent the copy protection on the songs I bought from iTunes. I would also like to have the option to use the MSN Music Store, which I can't because I have an iPod. I find Apple's comments regarding this matter completely ridiculous. This isn't about piracy, it's about Apple's monopoly and fear of competition. If I purchase a song from iTunes, I should have the option to play it on any MP3 player. It should be my right as a consumer. Everything is so locked down with copy protection now that the only way you can own a song now is to steal it. I'm with the French on this matter and hope and think that the rest of Europe will follow suit.
He makes some good points.
Yeah.
But there was one thing I did want to address. Apple does not have a monopoly with iTunes or the iPod. There's plenty of competition for both. Now, you can't say they're a monopoly simply because they're more successful than anybody else.
Or because they have the largest market share, which they do.
Right. That doesn't make them a monopoly.
Right.
You have plenty of choices to buy your music from plenty of different online resellers. Even if it was true that Apple had a monopoly for digital music, more people are still stealing music than buying music, unfortunately. Mm. Also, more than 90% of all music sold is sold how? CDs.
Yep.
Guess what? The iPod and iTunes are completely compatible with all of that.
Mm-hmm.
So you can buy your CD and you can put it on your computer and you can put it on your iPod and there's no DRM.
Yep.
Plain and simple.
Well, and technically you can also burn your purchased music to a CD.
And re-import it on another computer.
And re-rip it on another computer and then there's, yeah.
So there you can take any song that you buy in the iTunes music store, put it on a CD.
Mm-hmm.
If you have another computer, you can import it into that computer and put it on your Creative Zen or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Would I like it to be a little bit more open, the Apple's DRM? Yeah, I would.
Sure.
But it's not.
Mm-hmm.
I agree that it's fair whenever I buy the music. If I didn't like it, guess what?
We
I
don't have to buy the service.
It.
Yeah.
Well, I wouldn't have to buy it.
Yeah.
The next one I was going to read was from Michael Dalos, but we already had him on the phone, and
yeah.
We don't really need to read that one now, because he brought up pretty much everything he said.
Yep.
I thought it was just funny that he was the one that won it, and let's see, I'm trying to follow progressively email. Man, look at all these. Boy, it's not always not easy to figure out. Okay, here we go. This is from Ken.
Yep.
And Ken writes, my name is Ken, and I hail all the way from down under. And actually, we have quite a few readers from Australia.
And one writer.
Yeah, one writer, Carmel. That's right.
Yep.
And he says, I just wanted to chew the ear of an expert for a minute, if that's okay. I just read a review you did on the Alchemy TV DVR card last year, I think it was, and was wondering if you could answer a question for me. I am looking to use a PowerMac G5 1.8 GHz, 1 GB of RAM as a DVR, but want to push the recorded video to a Mac Mini in another room, Core Duo model. I saw the keynote that Steve did, so I'm assuming that if the video is recorded in a format compatible with iTunes, this will work, as Front Row and Bonjour do all the hard work. Am I off on another planet or not? And I wrote back, this will work just fine. It is not a compatibility with iTunes you need to worry about, but with QuickTime. Both Front Row and iTunes use QuickTime for video playback. A lot of people probably don't know that.
Mm-hmm.
They probably think that iTunes is capable of playing videos, which it is, but it's using QuickTime to power it. Same thing with Front Row. It's simply using the QuickTime component to play videos within Front Row.
Mm-hmm.
ITV, the software that you use with that DVR TV card, records in either MPEG or movie formats, or MOV format, depending upon the model you purchase. QuickTime will play both of these formats just fine. You can also bring those files into iMovie and edit them as well. And then, I do this occasionally. I'll grab your mouse.
And try to, work your laptop with it.
Yeah, it doesn't quite work that way. Let's see. And then that was a reply for him from that.
Oh.
He was like, wow, I can't believe you guys got back in touch with me that quickly. Yeah, I live in front of my computer is why. this was an interesting one. This is from
Luke Mildenhall Ward. And Luke writes, hello, Tim. I recently became a reporter for a website, and I have a big-name interview coming up, which I suggested we also do as a phone interview for download on the site, inspired by your great podcast, of course.
And I said thanks for the kind words.
I was wondering if you might be able to give any quick advice on the interview. It would be quite appreciated. In the past, I know it's usually best to do the interview live on the phone, but we've pre-written the interview already, and then we'll just redo the interview over the phone. Is this anything you've ever done before?
And I say never. It tends to leave out spur-of-the-moment answers. When you do an interview, and they have all the questions, and they have a chance to reply thoughtfully, you lose that live interview. Mm-hmm. It becomes, I don't want to say necessarily canned, because people are putting their time and the effort to answer the questions.
Yep.
But if it's an email interview, it usually doesn't flow as well as a recorded interview. Yeah. And I'll be the first to admit, I'm not the best when it comes to interviews. I'm pretty quick on my feet, but mm-hmm. sometimes I really don't know what I want to ask them next. So it would be a lot easier if I had questions prepared ahead of time, which we usually do.
We usually do, and usually when we do it, we try to at least have anywhere from 8 to a dozen questions lined up, so we have something to fall back to in case we all draw a blank.
If you go back and you listen to either the Gil Amelio interview or the Microsoft interview, we asked pretty much all the questions that we had written down, but mm-hmm. we actually asked about 3 times that many questions during both interviews.
Right.
And the reason is, and again, I'm not the expert when it comes to interviews, but I have found from personal experience doing this podcast and earlier endeavors that when someone says something, they give you an answer, it will quite often logically progress to another question.
Mm-hmm.
And if it's canned, here's my questions, and then they send you back the answers, unless you go another round, you really don't have that interactivity, you know, mm-hmm. that they say something that really should be followed up, but you can't because it's all a text-based interview. Mm-hmm. And he continues.
Also, I'm trying to get the interview done over Skype, but if it will be over the phone, how do I record a phone call? I've got no idea at all, but it's something you frequently do on the podcast.
And I wrote back, for our phone interviews,
yeah.
I simply hold my cell phone up in front of the microphone, and when the phone is in speaker mode, obviously. It does not always work the best for sound, and it doesn't.
Right.
And as Chad and I record this, I can't tell you how good our conversation went with
Mike.
Yeah. And I don't know how good that's going to sound on the podcast because I haven't listened to it back.
Mm-hmm.
But during that interview and phone call, it wasn't really an interview, it was a phone call.
Yeah.
I was simply holding my phone in front of the microphone about, maybe a foot and a half away?
Yeah.
With the volume of my cell phone turned up, it goes up to 7, I had it at about 5. Mm-hmm. If I go all the way up, it kind of gets echoey and it makes the whole phone kind of vibrate.
Well, you get a lot of distortion too.
Yeah. But the reason that we can do that is because we're using a very good microphone. If you're just using a headset, a USB headset, or a cheap USB microphone, you probably can't get away with it because mm-hmm. it's just not going to pick it up well enough.
Yeah.
We're using the M-Audio. It's a Nova Class A.
With the Mobile Pre.
Yep, with the Mobile Pre. So we're using really good microphone equipment to capture that sound. That's mm-hmm. why it sounds, I don't want to say great, because it doesn't sound mm-hmm. great, but it sounds better than it would normally. So if you're going to do telephone interviews, that's one solution. Another solution is Phone Valet, which I reviewed but maybe 6 months ago, and they just came out with version 4. I reviewed version 3. But that will actually allow you to place telephone calls on your Mac. You can record the both ends of the conversation on your computer
yep.
and record it that way. So you'll just talk on your phone, they'll talk on theirs, but your computer is recording both ends of the conversation. Mm-hmm. And, of course, once you've got it recorded, you can bring that into GarageBand and play with it a little bit, make it sound a little bit mm-hmm. better. So that's another option. But, when it comes to interviews, I think live interviews work the best.
Yeah.
If you're going to do an interview, and even if you're not going to post the sound file online, I still think it's probably going to be best if you talk to them rather than sending them a list of your questions. Obviously, mm-hmm. a 60 minutes type of interview, a hard-hitting thing, you can't do
right.
by text. You got to be there and you got to get the reaction. Mm-hmm. But even if you're not going to use an actual audio, but transcribing that,
mm-hmm.
that's going to come across better too. So, but you still have to record it so you can right. listen to it and type it out.
Yeah.
I think that's going to work the best all the way around.
Mm-hmm.
So there you go. That's my opinion. I got as we wrap up here, I got an interesting email. I don't remember who sent it, and it wasn't just to me. It was kind of occasionally because I'm considered press.
Mm-hmm.
There's readers out there who will send out questions to a lot of press members hoping to get some debate or going or whatever.
Right.
And this person sent out an email basically asking, is Mac OS X easier to use than like Mac OS 9 or Mac OS 8? And it kind of got me thinking, which one is easier? It's,
you know what?
If you started with 10, you're going to definitely say 10 is easier. But if you didn't start with 10, you're probably going to think that macOS 9 was easier.
Well, if you started with 10, you probably never you may never have used 9, so you really wouldn't know. I had the same adjustments everybody else had going from 9 to 10.
Well, there's some things about 10 I don't like. For instance, and this isn't necessarily about 10 as it is about the applications themselves, but sometimes, like under macOS 10, if you move a file, say the iMovie themes, from one location to another, iMovie will not be able to find them. It's also true if you go and you rename your hard disk. Let's say right now it's just Macintosh HD.
Right.
You want to name it Twiggy. It can break that.
Yeah.
And now it can't find it because the path name is different. And so I don't really like that. And that happens quite a bit with a lot of iLifeO 6 applications. Also, troubleshooting macOS 10 is far more complex than classic versions of the OS. For instance, say you had a corrupt font under OS 9. All the fonts were located within the font folder within the system folder.
Yep.
Well, under OS 10, that is no longer the case. They are now system-wide fonts under system library fonts, as well as user-specified fonts, such as, if you install an application. And those would be found under user library fonts.
Yeah.
So you've got different places for fonts now. I don't like that at all. Although sometimes that could be good, especially if something is corrupt in the system, you can just replace your system and you're good to go again, and it didn't mess with the user at all. And it works vice versa. If you got a corrupt user, another user on that computer would have no problem.
Right.
Under OS 9, if you were having problems, 9 out of 10 times the problem could really be traced right back to a recently installed system extension.
Yep.
On Mac OS 10 doesn't have extensions, but under Classic, under Mac OS 10, you just held down the shift as you rebooted your Mac, it would turn off the extensions. You go in, you drag out the extensions. It could be a pain. If you had a lot of extensions, that could really be a big pain in the butt, turning on and off extensions, trying to find the one that's
causing the conflicts. Yeah.
But usually, it was something that was recently installed, and that was pretty easy to remember or to find. You just do a search by when it was last modified or when it was installed. There it is. Drag it out, reboot, you're good to go.
Yeah.
But, you know, OS X is really built around permissions and multiple users. Tracking down a bad permission file is really no easy matter, nor is running disk utilities to repair permissions. That's really not even all that helpful sometimes. I can't tell you how many times I've run disk utilities, have it find and repair 20 permissions, then I run it again right afterwards, and it still finds 8 bad permission settings. So why didn't it fix those the first time around? It said it did, and then I run it, and it says exactly the same. I constantly, every time I run disk utilities, it always says something widget. And it says it should have been 88209, but it was 33104, and we have corrected the problem. And then I do it, and then I turn around and run the program again. Guess what? It wasn't fixed. It's still bad, and it will never fix it, and it drives me crazy. I have never run repair disk permissions and it come back with no problems found. It always finds them, and it never seems to be able to fix them. Never. That just drives me crazy. It does. Having multiple users, however, is cool under OS X for troubleshooting. If you simply log in with another user account on the same computer, and if the problem goes away, you know that the problem is somewhere within the user, not a system-wide problem. Tracking down the problem really won't matter. Or really won't be all that much easier, of course. You still don't know what the problem is, but you at least know that it's in the user and it's not in the system.
Yep.
And I found so far it's usually preference files that are giving you fits. So that's going to at least kind of help you that it's a user problem and it's probably somewhere in the preferences.
Yeah.
Not every time, but occasionally.
Yeah.
Well, at least most of the time as far as I could tell. What is nice about this, however, is that as long as you don't reformat or erase your drive, you can reinstall Mac OS X, the operating system. And like we were telling Mike earlier, it will leave your user account alone.
Yep.
And your user account, unless you did something really weird in the initial installation, your user account is where all your applications are, where all your preferences are. where all your user fonts are, that's where the information is. It's not in the actual system. So if you just do a reinstall of the system, you're probably going to be good to go. But make sure you back up first. So it's just one of those things. I got an email that kind of made me think a little bit. Tell them what the phone number is to call us. Send in their thoughts, questions, and comments, Chad.
Yeah, just to let you know, we've got Rick Springer next week from Variant Frequencies Podcast on as our guest. If you have any questions for Rick or for us, leave us a voicemail at 801-938-5559.
Rick's actually from Traverse City, Michigan.
Yep.
So 2 weeks in a row, we're going to be talking to Mac users in Michigan.
Sweet.
Of course, we didn't plan it this week. It just kind of worked out that way.
No.
They're opposite sides of the state, though.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I'm looking forward to talking to Rick. I actually talked to him briefly on the telephone just this week. So I think it's going to be interesting. I mean, the company he works for is Macintosh-based, and I think a lot of our listeners would really enjoy hearing about a company. When you go to work, it's all Macs. A lot of people have never experienced that. I haven't.
I haven't.
Yeah. The company I worked for was, I don't want to say all, because the servers were PCs, usually Dell. But, all the client machines, Macintosh.
Sweet.
The smell of fresh Macs in the morning. That's our podcast. Give us a call at 801-938-5559. Leave a message, tell us what kind of... Here's a good question. What's your favorite application on the Mac right now, and why?
Yeah.
801-938-5559. We'll be back next week with Rick and more Mac goodness from the Mac Web.
Thanks for downloading the MyMac.com podcast. You can subscribe to this podcast at our RSS feed at MyMac.com or by visiting the iTunes Music Store's podcast section. Please send all feedback to MyMacPodcast@gmail.com. And thanks for listening to the MyMac.com podcast.